Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I am your host, James Coker, along with Luke Francis. Luke, how are we doing?
Very well, James. Good to see you again. What have you been up to?
Always a pleasure. You know, just busy dad stuff this weekend. I'm coaching my kids' baseball team.
Awesome. Nice.
So that's been interesting.
Are you playing with them or against them or kind of home runs? You know, are
you just kind of like, you make sure they're running to the right base and paying attention and not sitting on the ground, picking at grass while they're in the outfield.
So no home runs. No, at least,
no home runs with your for coaching. 4 and 5 year olds, unfortunately. Like,
just wait for the prodigy.
I guess like the closest UK equivalent is cricket. Like at what age do children start playing cricket in the UK?
Well, I mean, I guess the pros will start as soon as they can pick up a wooden bat. But maybe 7, 8 properly if they're actually serious about it. But yeah, I think it's bat and ball from before that, I reckon.
Got it. Yeah, 4 feels young to be starting baseball, but here we are.
Oh, well, maybe you'll turn them into the next superstar.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into it. Today we are going to be previewing the Singapore Grand Prix. But before we do that, let's get into some headlines from the world of Formula One. First up, Max Verstappen had a pretty busy weekend, even though it wasn't an official Formula One race weekend. He was still in the car.
Yes, he was. He doesn't seem to like rest, I think, as we were saying in the pre-Baku episode. His rest is driving a slightly less powerful car. And that's what he did this weekend and simply proved why he is the best around. Essentially, following dominating in Monza, he went to get his license to be able to race at the Nürburgring in sports car racing. Weekend after that, dominated in Baku at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And then weekend just gone, he competed in his first GT3 race at the Nürburgring and essentially wiped the floor with the field. And these guys are veteran sort of sports car racers that are specialized in that type of racing. And essentially he joined in his debut race, qualified third, so started third on the grid. Within one corner, he was in the lead from third place. And then within 15 laps, he built up a lead of over 1 minute from that point. And then after that, just dominated to go and win his first ever GT3 Nürburgring race. So, pretty incredible stuff from him just to be able to hop in and basically wipe the floor with guys that, you know, call sports car racing their livelihood. I mean, it just shows Max's levels ahead of not just, I would argue, F1 drivers, but worldwide drivers in different types of machinery. It was quite something.
Yeah. It just, I feel like a lot of times drivers are like, oh, people don't realize how much it's the car over the driver. But he seems to be the antithesis to that, where he can hop in anything and do well, if not dominate.
Agreed. And I think Niki Lauda said it in Rush. It's all about the bum. You know, clearly Max just has so much feeling in his bum that he could just hop in anything and be rapidly quick.
Speaking of bum, I've always wondered this. Like, when I drive my car, I drive under the assumption that if I grip the steering wheel tighter and clench my butthole a little tighter, the car will go a little faster. Do you think professional drivers adhere to that thought as well?
I wouldn't say they clench very much, but I'm sure they use their developed nervous system at their behind to make sure they can get as much out of the car as possible. So you might be on the right lines there. Maybe there's just a bit of tweaking on your side, and you'll be where Max is pretty much. Maybe.
Moving on, this is not quite Formula One related, but in the world of MotoGP, Marc Marquez clinched a 7th world title. Unbelievably impressive.
It's unreal. It's unreal. I think it goes beyond just 2 wheels, beyond 4 wheels. I mean, this is one of the best comeback stories, I think, in sports ever. And that's not necessarily with bias in motorsport. I think you look at the likes, you know, Tiger Woods, for example, unbelievable comeback story. But if you look at Rossi's, the state he was in, back in 2020, he broke his arm. And then throughout that period, he went through three different teams, two different manufacturers, various surgeries. He could barely sort of see while he was riding because of the amount of times he'd come off and been injured. Shoulder injuries, hand injuries, months away, an operation that was basically do or die. You know, if it went wrong, he would never come back. And after, 5 years, he's back. And essentially, the fact he even won a race on his return is incredible. And then, I mean, what he's done this year, completely dominated. He's won 11 out of 17 races. Every time you see the podium, it's Marquez on top, really, whether it's a sprint race or a normal race. It's been unbelievable. And so I think when looking at a wider sports context, his story is astounding.
Does that mean Valentino Rossi is going to come out of retirement?
Maybe. We'll see. I mean,
I know he's busy driving GT3 cars. Maybe he'll do a Max.
Yeah, I mean, Max can do both, so maybe he'll do both. But, well, this is the thing. I mean, if Marquez is back to his best, I mean, which it looks like he is, who's to say he can't continue winning? I know age isn't necessarily on his side as much, but yeah, I mean, sky's the limit at this point. If he's able to keep dominating at this level, performing at this level, and have the bike under him to continue, then yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy to think what he can do and just rewrite the legacy of, not to discredit Rossi in any way and what he's done. Obviously, he is an absolute legend of the sport, but to eclipse him and everything he did is incredible. So we'll see if he can push for the total, for another world championship over Rossi and be not the greatest of all time, but statistically, but be up there in the leaderboards ahead of Rossi.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, last weekend, Romain Grosjean was back in a Formula One car since Bahrain 2020. I thought it was a really nice story and maybe closed the loop on the incident he had in Bahrain in 2020 to give him another shot in a Formula One car, specifically a Haas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's another feel-good story, another comeback as well for Grosjean. Obviously not similar circumstances of coming back and competing full-time, but coming back into a Formula One car. I mean, the accident he had back at the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix, I mean, we can all agree, one of the most harrowing accidents we've seen in F1, arguably in the past 15, 20 years, possibly. I mean, it goes way back. And I think, the miracle of him getting out and everything that happened there, sadly, it was his last competitive race. But we know that he was desperate to be back in the car in some capacity. We know there were murmurs about Mercedes possibly getting him a test drive at some point, which fell through. But I'm so happy to see him back in a car, back in a Haas, and back behind the wheel of a Formula One car. It's good story.
Yeah, totally agree. Also, someone who got a chance to drive a Formula One car at the same testing event was James Hinchcliffe of F1 TV and the IndyCar broadcast.
It's great to see. Yeah, great to see them testing various different drivers of different sort of, I guess you could say, backgrounds. I think usually these tests are maybe used purely for, helping the car and bringing in maybe a junior driver or a reserve driver. So, no, it's great to see Haas bringing in some wider motorsport faces, especially Hinch and Grosjean.
Yep, totally. And then last but certainly not least, before we get into the Singapore Grand Prix preview, Lewis Hamilton's dog Roscoe has passed away.
Yes, very sad news. We know he was taken ill on Friday evening, put in a coma, and sort of waiting all weekend. I know Lewis missed a certain fashion event and a Ferrari test, purely to be with Roscoe. But we heard this morning that Roscoe had passed away at the age of 12. Sad news. I think we've all seen Roscoe as another member of the paddock and, bottling around with Lewis by his side. And obviously we know how much Lewis loves Roscoe. And obviously we lost Coco maybe a couple years ago, a few years ago as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Lewis responds to this. I mean, not to turn this into a wider discussion, but you know, he's been publicly single for a while. You know, these dogs are sort of his family in a way. So it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to this. I don't know if it might affect him or possibly change how he perceives, you know, the way he goes about business. But yeah, very sad.
I know he mentioned in the caption of his post that this is the first time he's actually been with one of his pets, as it had to be put to sleep or it passed away. And I will say, this happened to me a few years ago where I had a dog that lived to 18 and a half and I had to take Digby myself to the vet to be put down. It just got to the point where his quality of life wasn't very good. And to be with a dog as they pass is a harrowing experience. It's not something that I would wish upon anybody. And I think it changes your perception. And it in a way, it feels silly because we're talking about an animal, but it does, experiencing that does change the way you look at life. And it is also very haunting at the same time. And we know how many people love Lewis Hamilton and we know how many people love his dog Roscoe. I don't think anyone without pets understands what a loss like this feels like. Many pet owners, I'm just going to touch on this for briefly. Many pet owners refer to a dog passing as crossing the rainbow bridge. It's an otherworldly place consisting of a sunny green meadow and a multicolored prismatic bridge that the pet eventually crosses that leads it to heaven. And there are multiple theories of its origin. Some credit Norse mythology, some credit the poem by Paul C. Dom. And I think it's a beautiful concept that has helped many people deal with the grief of losing a pet, because taking care of pets has become such a large part of our everyday routine, our habits, our rituals, and our purpose. And then we struggle with where to put that energy and that love when that pet's no longer there. So I just want to say, Roscoe, we love you, we miss you, and we'll meet you at the Rainbow Bridge.
That is so beautiful, James.
Thank you,
man. Honestly. Appreciate yeah. That. No, it's well, they're essentially a family member, right? I mean, a pet, you know, I've got a dog and they're just like anyone else in my family, you know, and they're, if anything, you know, much better because they're not sometimes a pain in the ass, you know. I mean, they are unconditionally loving and innocent and will just do everything for their owners, and I think that's why it is so hard. And I think for Lewis as well, you know, this has come at a really hard time. Yeah. Roscoe has been in his life for 12 years, arguably Lewis's best 12 years behind the wheel, winning, dominating, and it's just now where things are really tough with Ferrari. He's struggling to get to grips. He's not necessarily bringing it all together, that this is now thrown into the mix as well. It's definitely a challenging time, and I'm sure he'll be reflecting a lot in the next few months.
I don't want to talk about this too long, but I will also say what's probably difficult right now is, given that Roscoe lived a long life and lived 12 years, Roscoe is like a living, breathing connection to a world and a life that Lewis Hamilton no longer lives. Like, it's a connection to, you know, you take him back to 2012, 2013. It's either right at the beginning or before he started that incredible run with Mercedes. And so I think often when we have like a pet that lives a really, really long time, we feel like they're a bridge to our former self. And maybe we don't feel as connected to that past life when an animal like that or a person like that passes away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely. I think, moment of reflection for Lewis. But yeah, thoughts are with him. Hopefully he's coping okay.
Let's switch gears, pun intended, and talk about the Formula One Singapore Airlines Singapore Grand Prix 2025, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's do some quick race facts. Let's hear it. Do you want me to go through it or you want to do it?
I'll take through a few of them. I've got some fun facts, and then maybe you hop in with the track facts as well.
Let's do it.
So the Singapore Grand Prix, it's been on the calendar a fair while, since 2008, and hopefully will remain on the calendar until 2028. So that'll be 20 years of the Singapore Grand Prix. Last year, we saw a very dominant win by Lando Norris, which I think interestingly sets up this weekend. He won ahead of Max Verstappen. And interestingly, last year was the first Singapore Grand Prix without a safety car in however many years. So possibly we'll see that again. Hopefully not. We always like a bit of drama with the Singapore race.
Yeah.
Which leads me on to some of the previous races we've had. If those fans remember back to 2017, there was one of the most infamous Turn 1 wipeouts we've seen, with Max and the two Ferraris, essentially, where Max got away and the two Ferraris essentially came alongside him and squeezed him into a Ferrari sandwich and took all three of them out of the race. Wow. Namely, this was the moment, you would argue, where the championship was finished for Sebastian Vettel against Lewis Hamilton. I know we spoke last time about the Baku race being a big moment in that championship in 2017, but this was definitely the sort of nail in the coffin, you'd say. The points gap after that was just too big. So very momentous race in that case, and was a wet race as well. So it can rain and does rain a lot in Singapore. So we'll have a look in terms of that. And then 2008, for those that are aware, was arguably the most controversial race ever in Formula One, when Nelson Piquet Jr. of the Renault team crashed on purpose to give Fernando Alonso the win. This was, at the time, everyone thought, this is a little bit fishy. What's gone on here? Why has he crashed that's directly caused a safety car to directly contribute to Alonso's win? And those feelings were right. Over a year later, in 2009, Nelson Piquet came out after he was sacked, essentially owning up to what the team had ordered him to do in terms of crashing and giving Alonso the win. Notably, and this is the sort of quite worrying full circle moment, the man behind this decision is Flavio Briatore, who is now back at the same team in charge of Alpine this year. So, Colapinto, don't say yes. Just do your own race, please.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it's this controversy that also contributed to Felipe Massa not winning the 2008 World Drivers' Championship and it going to Lewis Hamilton in his second season in Formula One.
Correct. Yeah, there was an interesting knock-on effect. Essentially, the safety car that was brought out due to Piquet's crash caused Massa to come into the pits. I mean, they all kind of went into the pits, but Massa came in, and then as he was leaving, the fuel gun, because at the time fuel was allowed in pit stops, was stuck to the car as he pulled away. So Massa had to then stop at the end of the pit lane and have his mechanics pull off the fuel gun to allow him to continue. And so his whole race was damaged, essentially, from that pit stop. And arguably that caused the point swing, which meant Hamilton could get that fifth place at the final race in Brazil and win the championship. And yeah, as we know, Felipe Massa is pursuing legal action to try and overturn that decision and essentially hand him the championship, because we've seen that Singapore race essentially was fabricated. So it should be, in his eyes, it should be taken out of consideration for the championship. And so the championship should be given to Felipe Massa and not to Lewis Hamilton. That's the case he is putting forward. But I think, based on more recent championship finishes, once it's done, in my eyes, it's done. And he maybe has legal grounds, but it's unrealistic. And he's just wasting money, I think, going for it.
Agreed. Another belter that you did not mention in this outline, but I would like to mention, is 2023, which was the only race in that season where a non-Red Bull car won the race, when Carlos Sainz and Ferrari pulled out that incredibly exciting win. That was a banger, in my opinion.
Correct. Yeah, it was. It definitely was. And that it leads me on to another fun fact with this, because looking through the Singapore races, I was gobsmacked to see this one fact, but it now makes sense looking back at the 23 race, because Max essentially really struggled in that race, didn't lead a lap, didn't do anything, which has meant that of all people in Formula One history, Antonio Giovinazzi has more race-leading laps than Max Verstappen in Singapore, despite Max winning more than half of the races in the ground effect era. Obviously, four titles dominating throughout. He's not led more laps than Giovinazzi. I think he's led three laps in Singapore, Max, and Giovinazzi's led four. So Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. We'll see what happens this weekend. I think Max is in a good place. But yeah, one of those weird stats. But one slightly more cool fact about Singapore is because it is absolutely brutal for the drivers, tough temperatures, humid environment, long race, very technical track, lots of sort of slow braking, chicanes or 90 degree corners. The drivers can lose up to 2 to 3 kilograms in body weight purely just from sweating. So it's one of those races, arguably the race that is the hardest on the Formula One calendar. Obviously, everyone on the grid is a serious athlete and can withstand those forces. But yeah, something to keep in mind. A good fact from a Formula One point in general.
Yeah. Any other fun race facts before we get into the track facts?
So I think, interestingly, which did surprise me, possibly just recency bias, the most wins at this track is Sebastian Vettel. With five. So I think back in the days of his Red Bull days, he was quite dominant here. And then with Ferrari, obviously not in 2017, but he had some good races there too. And then with team wins, it's spread between Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari with four each. So possibly one of those three will be the most, get the most wins of any, or McLaren will possibly add themselves to that list as well. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, James, take it away with the track facts.
Let's do some track facts at the Marina Bay Circuit. This is a street circuit in Singapore. It'll be a night race with a 4.94 kilometer lap length with a 306 kilometer total distance. It will be 62 laps. The track is 19 turns with four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 DRS zones. And I just like that has to be the most out of any circuit on the calendar, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. It's a long lap and lots of sort of short bursts of straights. So they kind of squeeze them in wherever they can. And I think with changes to the lap structure, which I'm sure you'll mention, it just means there's more straights now than ever. So yeah, give it four. Why not? I mean, we'll see.
The track has evolved over the course of the last few years. They've taken out the stadium section a few turns between 15 and 20. It's now flat out with DRS between 15 and the new turn 16. And then there is an old style Singapore sling chicane at turn 10 taken away in 2013. So more straights, more speed. However, even though there are more DRS zones, it'll keep the cars closer together, but there is a belief that tire temperatures will negate passing. Do you feel like that's accurate?
Yeah, it could be. Temperatures are naturally quite high in Singapore. And from what I remember, that was the main reason that Max was struggling in 23. I could be wrong there, but I think it was it was that temperature tire warm-up issue that restricted that. So it could be one of those kind of weird races that it's not necessarily from the kind of natural performance of the cars. You know, we saw recently, obviously McLaren have done really well this year and Red Bull have recently come back. It could be that, that tire element brings in a bit of a wild card race winner. So we'll see. I think, yeah, it's one of those races that can throw up anything, especially if it's raining, especially if there's a safety car. It's a very tough track, very technical. It's essentially a really long Monaco, so it can conjure up a lot of interesting racing. So yeah, very interested to see, and hopefully those DRS zones can bring some good racing and not sort of, yeah, hopefully it can get in the way of those DRS trains we've been seeing more and more recently, obviously namely last week causing Lando to get stuck and not get the big enough points finish hopefully those DRS zones can negate those DRS trains from taking place.
For sure. I will say that I absolutely love a night race, especially a night race on a street circuit. I love watching the Las Vegas Grand Prix. I love watching the Singapore Grand Prix. The city just comes alive during this race. And I personally can't wait.
Yeah, no, it's a favorite of mine and definitely a bucket list race to go to.
100%. It
looks like an unreal place beyond the racing as well. That insane building across the harbor with the basically what looks like a boat on top of these three skyscrapers. It just looks like a really cool city, really kind of forward-thinking, advanced, great place for Formula One to be. So yeah, very excited to be back.
Hard agree. Let's get into some talking points. McLaren is poised to win the championship in Singapore. They were poised to win in Baku. Didn't happen for obvious reasons, but it looks like more likely than not, they're probably going to secure the Constructors' Championship in Singapore.
Yes, they most likely will. I know at the start of the last preview episode, we were talking about how it's basically a slam dunk for McLaren to win in Baku purely because of their performance in the past few races, the fact they've won two'd so many races or at least been on the podium. Obviously, none of us saw what came in terms of Piastri binning it in turn five and Lando getting stuck down in, I think it was P7 in the end. So it means the championship continues to Singapore. Now, I will say McLaren will wrap it up in Singapore. They, by all mathematical reasons, should, because they only need 13 points at all to prevent any other team essentially staying in the championship fight. So they need to at least combined score 13 points, which basically means they need to have another absolute nightmare race to not stay in this championship fight into next week or next round. So yeah, McLaren are on 623 points. Mercedes actually overtook Ferrari in Baku to go on 290. And then Ferrari are just behind on 286. So it is theirs. They will win the championship, but it's looking ever more likely that it will happen in Singapore, which is, yeah, great place to win the championship. And I could be wrong, but I have a feeling that it's not been done before, winning a constructors or drivers in Singapore. I might need to fact check that, but that could be quite cool.
Also, I guess the big question is, will Max continue to be a factor? How do you think he's going to fare in Singapore?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think we've seen, obviously, the past two races, he's been back to 2023 form, dominating, essentially, being top of the field. Partly, I think it's the track dynamics of Monza and Baku that have allowed that. The long straights, the ability to cut the rear wing down to be very very narrow. And I think for Red Bull, that's worked for better than any other team. I know other teams have been trying it. Obviously in Monza, that's the optimal setup, but clearly the Red Bull just gels with having a small rear wing. And so he's been able to dominate quite well. However, Singapore, you can't have that. There's too many slow corners, too many 90 degree turns. There are some flat out sections and some quick sections, but overall it is a much slower track and a much more technical track. So it could be a case that the Red Bull is simply locked in across the board. But I think it's definitely a question mark for me, is to see how he does. And especially with last year, Lando being so strong. And it's definitely one of his strong points on the calendar is Singapore. So definitely an interesting one. But for me, it's more looking at Max as a championship. Well, how would you say, sort of unpredictable element where he can just throw up anything when it comes to Oscar and Lando in the championship fight. Max could come second, meaning the points gap is bigger between the McLarens. He could win the race, which means both of them don't score as many. I think that's where it's interesting. Max affecting their championship fight.
I'm going to put on a tinfoil hat and just throw out a crazy conspiracy.
Really?
Right now.
You never do that. That's not
I never
your thing.
Do that. But as many Formula One fans remember, 2010 was one of the best seasons in Formula One in the last 25 years. The Drivers' Championship went down to the very last race between Lewis Hamilton, Mark Webber, Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel. That was, I believe, Sebastian Vettel's first World Drivers' Championship and started his four-year run with Red Bull. There are seven races left on the calendar, as well as three sprints, I believe. There's a lot of available points, Luke. Max Verstappen's only 69 points from the lead. George Russell is still mathematically eligible, mathematically capable of winning a World Drivers' Championship. What if in a crazy, crazy world, McLaren have a bad string of races because maybe they're like racing each other too hard and taking each other out? You have Max Verstappen and George Russell collecting up the lion's share of points in the next few races. And all of a sudden, we have a four-way fight for the World Drivers' Championship.
That makes me sound, makes me very excited. I love your thinking. I love your thinking. And I'm fully with you in terms of wanting that. Whether I believe that is another point. I like your thinking. I think for me, it's more... it's more of a 2007 sort of situation.
Okay.
Where you've got, because it's very similar, where you've got both McLaren drivers. Back then you had Lewis and Alonso battling it out. Obviously, those guys are a bit more, not as friendly as our current McLaren pair. But right. Both of them battling, clearly the kind of best car, clearly the guys that are battling for the championship. You know, that's what we knew throughout the season. And you had a very quiet Kimi Raikkonen, as he usually is before the vodka and the beer, but you had a very quiet Kimi slowly getting into the championship fight, not really making much much noise until the final few races, where it was like, whoa, he's a serious contender now. He is here and he can win this. And then look what happened. You know, both the McLaren sort of stumble over each other across the season, whether it's Alonso holding Hamilton up in the pits or whatever it is. And then Kimi sails through to win, which in this case is
I wouldn't Max say Verstappen. He sailed. He won by 1 point. And I think Alonso and Lewis were tied on points for second.
They were, yes. But it was an interesting finish. Yeah,
and you could say in 2007, if Alonso or Lewis had had a clear number two driver at McLaren and they weren't each other's teammates, they probably would have won that championship, right?
Agreed. Yeah. No, it's 100% true. So, Zach Brown, what do you think of that? Do you need to choose a number one or keep everyone happy? So, no, it's interesting. I think we've got what is probably going to happen, which is one of the McLaren drivers, most likely Oscar, winning a worthy championship. But there are two alternative tinfoil hat outcomes, which I support both. I'd happily see both, to be honest.
I think Max Verstappen still very much is in this fight for the World Drivers' Championship, and I would not be surprised if in three or four races we're talking about him winning a fifth.
I agree. I think we just need to see McLaren completely mess up at every race from now on, which is possible. You know, we've not seen them in a real pressured fight before, so it is definitely possible, and we'll see how they respond from Baku. I think that'll be the main thing. If they're able to bounce back and score solid points and get maybe a double podium, then I think they'll be fine. But if they let Baku get in their heads and sort of let the pressure get to them, and if we see another a repeat of maybe Lando binning it or Oscar binning it again, then I'm with you. We have a very interesting finish of the season on our hands.
Word. All right. Let's do predictions, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. I have George Russell P5, Charles Leclerc P4, Oscar Piastri P3, Lando Norris P2. And this is strictly recency bias. I know historically Max Verstappen and Red Bull does not do well at Singapore, but I'm going to say right now that Max Verstappen is going to win this race.
Fair enough. I've also got Max up there. Now I've said P5 for this position purely because I want him to, and I did it for the last race, so I feel I have to stick to my guns. I'm saying Hadjar P5. I think the RB is just very solid. Russell P4. I feel like he's sort of almost bought a house in that position for this season and sort of benefiting from it. All property prices going up. He loves that position. So I'd say Russell there. Piastri P3, Verstappen P2, and Norris P1, purely from Norris's previous dominance at this track. Of course, the past does not decide anything in the future, but I think, he loves the track. He knows the track. And I think he'll pull through and hopefully close the gap as well in the championship. Depending on where Piastri finishes, it could get quite tasty if Lando takes the win this weekend.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to see the race. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
All good for me. I'm excited to see what happens, and hopefully one of those two crazy championship stories can come true for us. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. I also just want to give a call out. This is not Formula One related, but it is motorsport related. We had the 6 hours of Fuji and WEC, or the World Endurance Championship, last weekend. And Alpine got their first ever World Endurance Championship victory in hypercar or LMDH with Charles Malessi, Paul Louboutin, and Ferdinand Habsburg coming through, winning a chaotic race, which had, I think, three safety cars, five full course yellows. It was a very French podium also, because Peugeot was also on the podium with Mikkel Jensen, Paul Di Resta, and Jean-Éric Vergne. But congratulations to Alpine.
Nice. Maybe we're going to see that kind of three-race contract concept exercise next year with those three hypercar drivers in Formula One. You never know. Briatore's done crazier things.
That's true. Also, we didn't touch on this yet. Mick Schumacher is going to be testing with Rahal Letterman Lanigan in IndyCar.
Yeah, so great to see him back in action. He deserves it so much. I feel bad the way it kind of panned out for him in Formula One. So I think it's great to see him, putting his skills to test in a proper racing series. So excited for him.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how he does in that test. And hopefully that means that Mick Schumacher is going to have a full ride in IndyCar next year. Having someone like him in the series, I think is just, it's a win-win. It's a chance for him to go out and compete. And I think it puts more eyeballs on the IndyCar series. So I'm excited.
Definitely. And I think he has pedigree, of course. I mean, we kind of see what he did in Formula One and question it. But, he won F2. He is a serious racing driver. So, no, I'm very excited to see, and hopefully he can rekindle that form.
He also did a very good job in World Endurance Championship. Alpine wanted to retain him, and I believe he wanted to go back to single-seaters, which is why he is doing this test and maybe making a full-time move to IndyCar.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, all the best, Mick.
Yep. All right, y'all, thank you so much for listening to the WTF1 podcast. We will be back next week with a review of the Singapore Grand Prix. Until then, have a great week. Bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.